Kevin McCullough, every day we talk about what is not only the breaking news of the day, we not only talk about what it means, but we try to talk about why it matters as well. And every now and then, we even take the headlines of the day and we set them off to the side so we can have some really good conversation with people that have important things to say that go beyond those headlines. And today, I'm honored to have, as my next guest, I would call them two members of one of America's favorite families. If you know anything about ducks, you probably know the name Robertson. But what you might not know as much of is a little bit about Al and Lisa Robertson's story, because Al, if I remember correctly, you're like the least filmed brother of all of them.
That's right.
Like you purposefully, like, well, the cameras come in one side of the house and there goes Al out the backside.
What happened, Kevin, was I looked too good for that show. You know, I mean,
I'm saying, where's the beard, man? Come on.
Well, first of all, our new book, I have a beard.
You do. You actually have a beard.
So I just want to show people I can grow a beard. The main reason I don't, of course, is because of this woman sitting next to me. She says her worst nightmare is to roll over and see someone who looks like my Uncle Si or my dad. So I think she's the real reason.
Or Willie.
Or Willie, yeah. Even worse. Well,
take your pick. They do kind of all look the same a little bit.
They do.
Anyway, welcome to New York, guys. It's good to have you. And we've had other members of your family in the studio. I think Uncle Si was here a couple of years ago, and your dad's been here multiple times, and love the whole family. So give our best to Mom and Dad and
everybody. We appreciate that.
Let's talk a little bit about, before we get into the content of the book, what you do and how it's different than the rest of your family and what you feel like God's called you to specifically.
Well, I was different anyway, because it's the reason Lisa and I weren't on the show initially, is because I was a full-time pastor at our church. I pastored our church for 22 years, my whole career.
Hmm.
And it's unusual because I grew up there. It's where we came when Dad first became a Christian. And so I was about 10 years old when we got there. And so my whole life was spent there. We had a seminary there. So, you know, just kind of my path seemed to be for that. And so that really allowed me to sort of be, I felt like a tether, you know, Lisa and I, for the family, because all of a sudden everybody gets famous and nobody really planned it.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay.
And a lot of times that has disaster all over it.
The last thing you want to be is bearded Kardashians, right? I mean, so I'm thinking somehow we have to, like, make sure everybody stays grounded. So Lisa and I felt like that was our role in the early part of the success package. And then later we came on board kind of in a limited way. But it still was great, because Lisa and I are very close to Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, all the other brothers have their projects and what they're working on. When we got out of full-time ministry, that kind of became our ministry. So we kind of became their gatekeepers, all the projects that Dad has going. So we started a production company, produced Dad's new show that's on Blaze TV.
Right, right, right.
And so it's really just has turned into a really great thing and allows us to do what we like to do, which is, of course, continue ministry books and things like that.
Yeah. So, well, it's fun to hear that side of it, because I think people do look and say, oh, you know, fame and fortune and how that can – so to know that rooting and that tethering, to use your word, is there is really important. What's the most interesting thing about your family that America doesn't know?
That's a great question.
Because they know your family is politically conservative,
right,
and faith-based, and very,
right,
your dad's very outspoken about his beliefs. And your brothers seem, you know, I think if you're just to ask the average person on the street, all good reflections of your mom and dad. Like, you've all kind of been instilled with,
right,
what seems to be good character, and you've made good choices.
Right.
You all married beautiful women inside and out. And
which a lot of people ask us about.
It's one of those things where...
How did that happen, right? So I love it.
Are they all blind? Is that what...
Right.
It is?
So an audience will ask in a Q&A, how is it that you guys got such beautiful women? So I turn it back on the audience. And I say, well, what do you think? And they would say, well, it's because you had money. We're like, no, we were poor.
That's right.
So it wasn't that. It had to be something else. So I usually just let it percolate. Actually, the thing I would say that you couldn't tell from the show, you could tell there was a spiritual part of who we are.
Even, right,
it wasn't like a preachy show. It was a funny show, but
no,
it was kind of crazy.
But like the prayers at the end.
Right.
The
so there were all those little
thing.
Signals.
It's right.
Like, there's something more to this family. I think what people really don't know, unless they listen to us individually or hear us somewhere, is how deep that runs. In other words, it's not just a surface, you know, we go to church, you know, we're a Christian family, in air quotes. It is, we have a very deep spiritual commitment, and first to God and then to each other.
Mm.
And that's why we've been able to maintain, you know, four marriages to the same women, and been through difficulty. I mean, Lisa and I have been very open about our problems in our first book. And so we did that as a way to show people, look, you know, you can be in a great, solid situation and still lose your way.
Mm.
And we did, you know, which kind of led us to that, you know, idea.
Which we haven't heard any of that story on this broadcast, so maybe we'll get into some of that. But Al and Lisa Robertson are my guests, and their new book published by Focus on the Family is called Desperate Forgiveness, How Mercy Sets You Free. Lisa, let me pick up on what Al was just saying there, and that is, to be a wife and a mom and to have the TV cameras kind of always around, and there's a certain degree of living under the microscope at all times, that had to be hard for the family as a whole, and maybe you personally. Talk to us a little bit about what that's like.
Well, that is hard, but I think probably we were a little, Al and I were more used to that. Because, you know, when you're a minister, you're in a fishbowl also.
Yeah, that's true.
So you have to learn to live your life out in the open, you know. But I think, you know, for us to be the person that they could always come to, because mm-hmm. we have been in that role, you know, for all of our married life, because he started ministry right after we were married. And so we were the people that they could come and talk to and say, you know, what do I do about this or what do I do about that? Because everybody has a first impression. And if you're not on your A game, that first impression may not be a good one.
Hmm.
And so we always said, you always have to make a good first impression. Because some people, that's the only glimpse of you they're going to get.
Hmm.
And at some point, that may be the only glimpse of Jesus that they get, is who you are and what you represent. And so for us, it was a little bit easier. It was a little bit harder for the others. Our kids are grown. We have grandchildren. So we did not have also that responsibility of keeping our kids in the faith and grounded.
Right.
Because our kids were already grown. And so we tried to help them also with, you know, with their children. But I'm telling you, at the end of the day, the thing that it boiled down to was, we're a family. We love God, and we're going to stay together, you know, no matter what. And you mentioned a while ago that we've all made good choices. Well, we have in later life, but we haven't always made good choices. All of us, you know, have made some poor choices.
There was a big fear for the next generation, because you look at Sadie as a perfect example, you know, Will and Corey's daughter. She, because she was on Dancing with the Stars, she, like, brought in this whole other realm. So
right.
She's like a rock star, you know, and she's
right.
a teenager. And so all this was happening to our teenage nephews and nieces for Lisa and I when, you know, Miley Cyrus, you know, was Hannah Montana and became Miley Cyrus. So we're watching that transition, and the last thing we want to do is lose our kids, you know,
right.
because they were so strong. The blessing is all of them now are super grounded. Most of them are getting married, having their own families. Sadie's still doing her thing. You know, she spoke to a million teenagers the last 2 years around
wow.
the country.
Wow.
I mean, what an opportunity, and she's made the most of it, which is a blessing. So we feel like that was our role, to try to stay in that shepherding place. We were just with Jeff and Jessica. Jeff is, I call him my baby sister, my younger brother, but because he's a little sensitive, you know. But
never picked up on that in
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wink, wink.
We have an ongoing time with that, because now he's in Austin, so he's in one of these hipster doofus guys, you know, down there. His beard fits in, but he's, you know. But anyway, he was just telling us that, you know, he's 14 years younger than us, and so when I did their wedding, he and Jessica, and so all those early years of typical newly married couple, Lisa and I, we were their go-to. And he just told me recently, because they've been married now for almost 20 years, and he said, you know, if it wouldn't have been for you guys, I don't know that we would have, you know, made it as
yeah.
strong as we have. And so that was a great compliment, I felt mm-hmm. like, to us.
It's really hard. Let's talk about the book a little bit. Desperate Forgiveness, How Mercy Sets You Free, by Al and Lisa Robertson. Why this subject?
Well, it's Lisa and I call it a sequel, really, to our first book. Our first book was called A New Season, and it was really just us telling our story. In that story, Lisa had an affair for 14 months. I'm in full-time ministry. As she mentioned, we were in the fishbowl already, so you can imagine how ugly that was in terms of how it went down. But we found a way to not only move past that, but then to find forgiveness for each other. And Lisa really became a different person as a result of embracing God's forgiveness. So that was 20 years ago. The last 20 years, God has used us sort of as a, we call it first responders of, you know, marriages on fire.
Right,
so
right, right.
When most people are running out of that situation as fast as possible, we're the ones that run in and say, can we sit down? Can we talk? And so God just built that in us. And so this book is basically stories of people that we've worked directly with. A lot of them are marriage, but not all of them. Some of them are father and son and other ways where there's just such an impasse of bitterness and difficulty, and people just can't get past something. So the relationship is just broken or stagnant. And we're saying the answer is to somehow find a way to break that curse and extend forgiveness. And so that's what we found, and that's what we've helped other people find.
Well, and people that study Scripture understand this pretty clearly, but there's more time spent in the text of God's Word dealing with how we treat people.
That's right.
Than almost any other. Money and how we treat people are two of the things that God really cares about, because he spends a lot of real estate in Scripture dealing with that. Lisa, I have not heard your story except in summary in this interview, but I think it would be helpful for my audience to kind of have some context here. So need to go back into the first book a little bit, talk to me a little bit about the situation that led to where you got to, and then eventually how God came on the other end of that to help bring you to the point of forgiving one another.
Well, our new book is Desperate Forgiveness. Our book that we wrote previous is called A New Season. And you know, we talk about in that book all the things that happened, starting from the time we were children up until, you know, we were married in 1984.
So were you like high school sweethearts?
Yeah. We were, sort of, kind of that way. But we actually met whenever I was in the sixth grade and he was in the eighth grade.
She stalked me in middle school. I didn't even know who she was back then, but
she just knew you didn't have
the
beard.
Well, now I have her arrested.
All your brothers had beards. She's like,
well,
that's
right.
The one sixth grader that doesn't.
Exactly.
I like him.
That kid looks
that's
good.
That's right. That's right. But I think probably that, you know, whenever I was a young child, I had sexual abuse in my life. Mm. Whenever I was 16, I was not with Alan at that point, and I found myself pregnant. Mm. You know, and you think you found yourself pregnant. Well, at 16, yes, you know, because you're dumb and you don't really know what you're doing. But so, you know, my only alternative, I thought, you know, and my parents thought, because we didn't want to, you know, I lived in a family where you put on your best face, you know. You could fight all the way to church, but whenever you got out of that car, you better have a smile on your face, and everybody loved everybody. You know, and so I had an abortion at 16 years old. Mm-hmm. Then I married Alan at 18 years old. I mean, just many, many things, many reasons, not excuses, for what I did whenever I was 33 years old. And that was whenever I had an affair. But I say that to say there are a lot of reasons why people need forgiveness. Sometimes it's what other people have done to them and the consequences and their actions afterwards.
Sure.
Sometimes it's their own actions. Sometimes it's just, like you said, stupid mistakes. Do you realize that we make some of the most important decisions of our life from the time we're 12 years old to the time we're 18 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And those decisions affect the rest of our lives, you know? Who we're going to date, whether or not we're going to have premarital sex. I mean, what school we're going to, what college we're going to. I mean, all of those things affect the rest of our life. And so, you know, I just think that we wrote the book because there are people out there who are desperate, who know that there's things that are happening in their life, but they cannot figure out why.
Yeah, they can't dig into the what got me to this point. Because that's really what Release Lisa and I, and that's what really the book is about, is finding that release. So what we do is we tell stories of people that were like us in a very desperate place, couldn't figure out how they got there,
right,
brought all the baggage into a relationship. And then we compare those with biblical stories where similar things happen, because the Bible is full of flawed people. And you said it. I mean, relationships that have fallen apart because of these same things that impact us today. And so, you know, when we look at our lives, there's one of the stories in the book is the story from John 7 where the woman is at Jesus' feet and she's just broken, just pouring it out. And here's this guy looking over at her and saying, who is this? I mean, if this guy knew who she was, you know, he wouldn't have anything to do with her. But it was just the opposite. I mean, Jesus wants to embrace us in those moments of brokenness. And so he looked at her and he looked at Simon the Pharisee and he said, I tell you something, the person who has been forgiven the most has the biggest capacity to love. But the person who has been forgiven little and embraced that doesn't love much. And so you think about that, forgiveness even expands our capacity in how we love other people, which is huge. And that's why, you know, some of the people that are the most bitter probably have the least amount of forgiveness, either that they've extended or received themselves.
Yeah, on a couple of different levels there. Desperate Forgiveness, How Mercy Sets You Free is the name of the book. Alan Lisa Robertson are my guests. Let me ask you about this kind of sidebar in this whole issue, because it's one thing to have those experiences, Lisa, that you were describing. It's another thing to have them in the 1950s when the morality of a culture may have been less permissive in certain ways. And so while there's not a necessarily a very merciful society that you're in, there's at least an incentive to drive people into one direction that helps them avoid some of the fallout. We now live in a day in which you can literally not be allowed to say that a man is a man and a woman is a woman.
That's right.
The reigning NC2A women's track and field champion for Division II NC2A national championship for the women's division is a biological male,
right,
as of 2 weeks ago. The record holders of all the state track and field championships for girls in Connecticut this last year are biological males. My point being that, and it's not just the transgender thing, but all the rules are out the window. Right. And most people don't say that there are guidelines and parameters that it's best to kind of live your life in the midst of. So how has that changed in terms of how, when you're dealing with people, getting them back to some sort of like moral kind of absolute so that they begin to understand what's on the good side of the line and on the not so good side of the line?
Well, I think it everything you pointed out shows how much we have to try to engage at the cultural level, because you're right. There was a time where just things were passed down that you understood the nature of.
Right.
Now, that's out the window.
Not everybody went to church, but everyone could tell you the story of Noah and the Ark.
Exactly.
But that's gone.
It's gone. And in fact, you know, when I look at that and I see that, it really pains me, because I'm like, how are we going to get a message that's going to help people when they don't even know that they need help?
Right.
You know, because that's where people
and they're being told continually, you don't need help.
In fact, you're exactly right. In this situation, that happened just this past Sunday, when, you know, now there's all a controversy because a guy prayed over the president. And so it's like, people are upset, I can't believe this. And you think, there would have been a time when that would have been so normal. You know, the days of Billy Graham or whatever, of course you would pray over a president and ask God to bless him with wisdom. Now it almost seems like it's a foreign, you know, what is this? What do you mean pray for wisdom from God? What is that? And so I'm reading all the different things on social media about it, and it blows me away. And so I don't know that I have a complete answer for it, other than to continue to speak out, to continue to try to get in the stream to figure out what do we do when the culture begins to just completely,
because there's two levels to that. There's the kind of 35,000 feet where you want to try to change policy and try to make policy come more in line with what looks like traditional morality. But then there's that people fallout factor. So there's people getting hurt in the midst of the confusion that's being out there, and that's where something like Desperate Forgiveness becomes even more important, because right, people are going to be making mistakes, kind of carpet bombing their own lives. They don't even realize it.
That's right.
Alan Lisa Robertson are my guests. You may recognize the drawl from northern Louisiana.
That's right.
Actually, I think we have some territory, at least in common, because I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Oh, yeah.
But I went to a little Bible camp in Louisiana every summer in a little town called Ringgold. Do you know where Ringgold, Louisiana is?
Absolutely.
What highway is that on? It's that little stretch of, you go like...
It's kind of south of Shreveport.
Yeah, Interstate 30 to like, what is it, Linden? And then you turn south.
Turn south.
See,
that's
I'm pretty good.
Right.
I've been in New York for 20 years. Like,
man,
I'm
impressed. Yeah. Now, that's over
That camp still stands. It's now called Southland, but it was Bible Memory Association back in the day. And you had to memorize
verses. That's
an
area where they
to
have to
go.
Pipe in sunshine, Kevin. So you were deep in the woods.
Yes, yes.
Deep in the woods.
But there was this beautiful little lake and the great Christian camp that changed my life for the better. Focus on the family you worked with for this book. What was it like working with such a legendary and kind of iconic organization?
Huge, huge blessing, and one that we didn't anticipate. You know, we published a lot of books in our family. Obviously, millions are in print. And so when the show ended, we just kind of went through our normal process. But I was having a hard time getting, because everybody's like, Duck Dynasty, it's over. You know, that's done. You know, so I wasn't getting a lot of love in the publishing industry, and despite the fact that it made a gazillion dollars off our family. So, you know, which is, that's the way it works, right? Yeah. You know, what have you done for me lately? But so kind of out of frustration, I reached out to a friend who was working at Focus who had been in publishing just to kind of give me some advice. And he calls me back and he's like, hey, would you be interested in partnering with us to do this title?
Hmm.
And I was like, you guys do that? I had no idea. And we'd been on the, you know, Jim Daly show a few times and had a relationship with him. So that opened the door for us to do. They do a few titles every year with different people, and it's been a blessing because we were able to go there, of course, be a part of their organization. They obviously are a huge impact in our culture. We were just here in New York a couple of months ago when they had one of the largest pro-life rallies ever. We were right there in Times Square.
I was standing right there by stage. Yeah,
oh,
Jim
yeah.
and I were hanging out together. Yeah,
we probably saw you. And didn't
you
know
probably
who you
did.
Were.
Yeah.
And but what a blessing that was. So
my beard wasn't long enough.
That's right. So you just look like a New Yorker.
That's
you know,
right.
That was the problem.
You didn't quite stand out enough.
That's right. No, in fact, we had 20,000 people there, and you know, the New York Post promptly wrote it up in their review the next day of having 400. I was like, 400?
Really?
There were 400 in the VIP pit right in front
right.
of the stage.
There were 400 where we were standing. That's exactly right.
It's crazy. Well, congratulations. Pray that God uses the message in this to really help people, and just thanks for being faithful to what he's called you to and how you were able to do that with your family during their rise to fame and even what you're doing with your dad now, but also for the next generation and putting wisdom down on paper. It's going to be helpful, and glad we're able to talk about it.
Well, and we reciprocate that to you. Thank you, Kevin, for what you do, because we talk about being a difference in the culture, but if you don't have voices out there who speak truth into it, whether it's on airwaves or books or whatever, we're never going to be able to and we just want to help people.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same as you. You hate to see people trapped, and this other whole mindset traps people.
Yeah.
And so we want to
just do me a favor on the next book. Get someone else besides Metaxas to do the cover quote for you.
Well, next time I'm going to get you to put
every time there's a book that comes in, it's got Metaxas on him. Like my friend Shannon Bream at Fox, who's got him on the back. Said, you know, we're going to have to live with him now. He has to.
Right.
We have to somehow
his
get
head
in the
will
same
not
room.
Fit in his
not
studio.
That doorway. We won't. Right. He can't get in here anymore.
Exactly.
Anyway, Eric, I love you. You know that. Just kidding. Al and Lisa Robertson, thanks for coming.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you.